Good morning. It is time to spit the BS. It's time for Undisputed. It's time in just a few minutes to talk Coach Cal called by the Hogs. Anthony Davis's eye injury, nothing to blink at. Is there a doc in the house for the Bucks? And Bronny now expected to go back to school, really? But first up, I say good morning to Keyshawn Johnson and especially to Rachel Nichols. Thanks, welcome back.
Morning,
great
there,
to
Skip.
Have you. How are you, sir?
Good.
All right, but first up, we must discuss what surely will be the most watched women's basketball game ever, featuring all-time leading scorer versus 37-0 team. Doesn't get better than that. And Caitlin Clark did score 30 points, but only 12 of those and one three came after the first quarter, as South Carolina inevitably wore down and out Iowa 87-75 to finish the season as 38-0 national champs. South Carolina predictably won the boards 51-29 with 18 offensive rebounds. And South Carolina's bench outscored Iowa's, you ready for this, 37-0. I'll say it again, 37-0. Now, Iowa did cut it to 5 and had the ball with 4 minutes left, but Kate Martin turned it over, and South Carolina closed the game on a 7-0 run, and that was that. And afterward, let's hear what Caitlin had to say, because she expressed no regret.
South Carolina's just so good. Like, there's only so much you can do. I mean, Cardoso has 17 rebounds. They have 51 as a team. We have 29. Like, hard to win a basketball game like that. You basically got to shoot perfect at that point. They're a really good team. So, like, we knew they were going to go on runs. By no means did, when we started off as hot as we did, did we think we were going to be able to hold that lead. Like, that's just what good teams do. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, like, there's some crazy statistic where South Carolina just outscores everybody in the second half by a bunch of points every single game.
True. So, Keyshawn, start us off. What exactly happened to Caitlin after that all-time great 18-point first quarter?
Well, she went 5-for-20 from there, right? You think about that.
Yeah.
That's adjustments, though. That's Don Staley and that's the defensive staff putting some clampers on that and saying, hey, you got your 18 in the first quarter. We're not going to allow you the rest of the game to do these sort of things. Now, she missed shots. She missed open shots. But they were crowding her. They were passing her off. They was making the necessary adjustments and harassing her. Skip, look, you can't continue to go on a run the way that she has when you don't get the help from your others. And I mentioned this to you last week when we talked about her. She's going to get hers, but everybody else. What about everybody else? Everybody else has to chip in. They chipped in against LSU. They didn't chip in against South Carolina. Okay, so that's one of the main reasons they lose this game. On top of South Carolina, been there, they done it. It's a kind of somewhat of a veteran team with transfers there. And Don Staley, let's face it, she knows how to coach. She's not going to allow the things that happened against LSU and what Kim Mulkey did, like just leaving this particular individual. And you got her. Don't, you know, you take care of her, even though she's cooking for 40-plus points. And so you make these adjustments, and this is basically what happened at the end of the day. They did a great job defensively. And, you know, partly she missed some shots, and they just never got back into a rhythm. That's the way I saw it.
Okay.
I think you could see the wear on her, right? So the physical wear. Okay. She is a focal point of the defense, not just yesterday, but certainly on Friday. I mean, UConn gave her everything. So to have two times in what, 45-hour period, where you have that much physical sort of beating up on you and people coming at you, I think you could see by the second half, she's 4-for-14. She's 1-of-7 from three. That 1-of-7 number, though, to me is also about mental wear and tear. Having to be the person who carries the team, who frankly has to carry all of women's basketball, is the position we've put her in a little bit unfairly at this point. And knowing, just from a basketball standpoint, if she doesn't catch fire, if she isn't electric, if she isn't 18 points in the third or fourth quarter, they have no chance of winning. You heard her after the game. That South Carolina team is so deep. They're so good. They have a center who is, you know, nearly a foot taller than everyone else on the floor, bringing those rebounds down. She would have to be superhuman for all four quarters. And mentally, that is just an incredible weight to carry. So to me, I saw her pressing in that second half. I saw her taking some of those three-pointers, just hoping to make it up on the scoreboard. And that is the weight of someone who knows it's all on her. And by the way, it was. And she wasn't superhuman. And that's okay. The South Carolina team is just so exceptional. You have to look at what that team did. It is an all-new starting five.
Yes.
That's crazy to go undefeated, win the title, have freshmen coming off the bench to change the tide of the game for you. That is just such a complete, deep team. And key to your point, Iowa didn't have that.
True. Okay. So I'm first going to congratulate South Carolina because I thought they were extraordinary all year long. And this was, as Raven Johnson said after the game, the end of their revenge tour. And I was happiest for her of all the South Carolina players, because if you remember what happened in the semifinal last year, Caitlin Clark just flat out disrespected her. Mm-hmm. And she was at the top of the circle with the ball, and Caitlin just backed off into the lane and just said, just go ahead. Just go ahead. Reminded me of what Pop used to do to LeBron back in the day. Yes. He used to just wave and say, just let him shoot that. So here she is, and she's just waving at her, and it crushed Raven Johnson's spirit. And she said after the game, or after last night's game, that she actually thought about quitting basketball because it got so bad. I still think all these young players read their social media responses too much, but it just ate her alive. So this whole year for her was a revenge tour to get back to this moment. And to Keyshawn's point, yeah, they switched off some players, but for the most part, I'm going to say 75% of the time, Raven Johnson took Caitlin face to face, sort of throat to throat, here we go, and flipped the game on its head right at the end of the half when she stole the ball and went all the way down for a little layup. Yep. That suddenly I look up and I said, wait a second, South Carolina's up by three at halftime thanks to her. So I mostly congratulate her because she deserved this even more than the rest did. Mm-hmm. So the rest of the story was, as I said Friday, look, South Carolina's just too big for them.
Yes.
And Hannah Stuhlke played huge against LSU, and I thought she played big on Friday night, but she did not play big yesterday because, to your point,
it's hard to play.
Wait
big.
A second. Camila Cardoza is like a foot taller than she is. She's actually 6'2 to 6'7. So it's 5 inches that she was giving up. So Hannah Stuhlke gets 3 rebounds yesterday. It's just not enough. You are going to get annihilated on the backboard and you're going to give up way too many offensive rebounds. Okay, now back to Caitlin.
3 versus 17. Math is correct.
It's a complete mismatch.
That's a different number.
All right, so now I'm going to treat the women's game just the way I would treat the men's game because they have earned the right to be criticized, if you will. Like that, this is my highest form and of regard and respect.
Yes.
I was disappointed in Caitlin, and I give you the tired excuse because she deserved it, because she plays 40 minutes every game. It's ridiculous because they have no bench. 37-0, they got outscored. And I'm looking down the bench, and they went with Feuerbach. I didn't think she even played for them, and suddenly she's getting minutes because they need somebody, because the two freshmen are coming in, as you point out, for South Carolina, and Tessa Johnson just raining threes. And Fulwiley just looks explosive. I'm saying, well, Iowa's got nothing to deal with that. So the point was, yes, she wore out mentally and physically, but I just expected a little bit more because she's been it all year. And I thought, okay, it is the last game. She knows it's the last game. It's a tough turnaround because it's from late Friday night, and they started at noon out here in the Pacific time zone.
Not even the UConn game, though. Skip, you can go all the way back to a week ago, the LSU. You still had to muster up energy regardless to what LSU you beat them.
Absolutely.
But you still had that energy you had to get through to get to UConn, from UConn to get to South Carolina. That mental fatigue over those three games.
Okay, but again, many people were making the GOAT case for her, and we'll delve deeper in this in just a few minutes, but I'm watching, like, after 18 in the first quarter, I'm not sure you can get much better than what she did in the first quarter, right? Yeah. I mean, were you not impressed?
I was just like, 18 points in an entire two games.
I sat back and I said, this is all time. And surely I didn't think she could sustain that. But to your point, the rest of the way she goes 5 for 20, and the rest of the way she goes 2 for 9 from three. Yeah. Are your legs heavy, or is the weight on your brain heavy?
Skip, when you're in those situations, like Rachel said, it's the mental fatigue, the stress level. You're carrying the women's basketball. You're trying to you're trying to accomplish a lot, right? You're trying to win your first national title. You're trying to show those that doubted you they're wrong. You're trying to also ball out to they claim that that GOAT status. I mean, all of that. You don't think that that young lady is going through those things in her mind the night before the game? Of course she is.
No,
1,000%.
And also, just you have to think about the mountain in front of her, right? She would have had, we're joking, hey, you didn't expect her to score 18 in every quarter, right? You're on pace for 72 points. Yeah. But that's kind of almost what she would have had to do, right?
I understand. That is true.
You have a team that was getting into this game favored by 7. Mm. They weren't favored by 2 points. They were favored by 7.
True.
Think about what Caitlin Clark would have had to do to beat a team like that. And it is a credit to her that you sat there in front of your team thinking, TV, thinking maybe she could do it. I don't know, especially after that first quarter.
I didn't expect 18 a quarter, but I might expect 9 a quarter from there on.
I feel like if you ran 100 simulations of that game, South Carolina is winning,
you're probably
right, 70 of them. And it's a credit to Caitlin Clark that there's 30 that she isn't, but it's still more likely South Carolina would win.
But I reiterate, with 4 minutes left, they had cut it to 5 and made a stop and got the basketball back. Uh-huh. And at that point, Kaylin looked gassed to me because she didn't want the basketball. And Kate Martin's, her close friend, is looking at her like, really? You want me to go? Yeah, yeah, you go, you go. And Kate Martin dribbles into an error and lost the basketball, and that was it. Because then South Carolina said, that's enough of this, and that was that. And that was the end of Kaylin for the rest of the game. So my only point is, I thought maybe Caitlin would reach down. Keyshawn, you know how that feels when you're, what's the old Lombardi line that we've talked and talked about? Fatigue makes cowards of us all. But you reach down and you just say, fatigue, go away. I'm not a coward. I want the basketball. I'm just going to suck it up, muster it up, reach down for one last little piece of magic. Because she can be magic when she wants to be. And I've seen her do this again and again and again late in games. And she just wasn't home anymore. She wasn't there.
Maybe she was trying to preserve the 42% from three.
Maybe. Is that what she was?
No, but that was the skip LeBron.
And that's exactly what he did do. And that's what he continued to do.
I love you, man.
That's what he continued to do.
You can.
By the way, LeBron last night had that early April flu. I don't know what it was. It was something.
I
mean, they sent him home. He came. He showed up. He tried to play. They sent him home.
But, Skip, you're right, though. There's something late in games that the competitiveness kicks in no matter how you feel.
But don't you think she got too competitive at the end? I feel like at the end she was pressing.
But what Skip is saying that nobody else touches the basketball with these 4 minutes to go except for me.
I clear out, I'm doing it.
I'm just going to do it.
Even if it's slow, I'm going to get there.
Quick point of order to this. After the first quarter, she did not shoot a free throw. She shot 6 in the first quarter and made 5 of them. She didn't shoot another free throw. So I'm just saying there's even a way. She just puts her head down because she's got first step quickness. And just go and try to foul somebody out or get to the free throw line somehow to score some point some way where you just suck it up and say, I'm going to do this.
And maybe she just thought her teammates at that moment in time could step up and take some of the load off of her. That's, it's a lot of different ways. As they say, she's making the right play at that time. And hopefully they would step up and hit those shots and not rely on her to do everything.
Yep. Well, listen, when she does get in the lane and kicks it to Gabby Marshall or to Kate Martin, they usually, you can just see it in their eyes like, thank you, I got this.
Yeah.
But she couldn't create because they had run her into the floor. And yet, after the game, I was a little surprised because you know how quote-unquote killer competitors get. I thought she might sit up there and just shake her head and pound the table and say, we had them and we let them off the hook or something to that effect. And I got nothing but we are so proud of ourselves, which is cool because she had the weight of the world on her shoulders.
They really didn't have them, though. Yep. Even though they cut the lead down to 5.
But
they really
I thought maybe she wouldn't give in to it and she'd sit up there and shake her head and say, I let my team down or something to that. But she just wanted to talk about the magnitude of their achievement because her point was, whoever expected Iowa to get to 1 Final Four as opposed to 2 straight Final Fours and to the championship game? Wow, okay, twice in a row. Okay, well, that's great. But is it time to celebrate that at that moment? I wouldn't have, but that's the way I look at it. And I was just a little surprised
by
her.
For University of Iowa in women's basketball, I'm okay with them celebrating that because they may never, ever get there again.
They might not.
They may. They may never, ever get there again. How many Caitlin Clarks are running around saying, I'm going to Iowa? I mean, like, no, I'm serious.
Well, to a better point is how many Caitlin Clarks are running around, period.
In general, though. Right? You know, when you think of top, what was she, a top four recruit in her class?
She, but top Paige, four. Paige Beckers was the first.
No, I'm saying she's a top four. Mm-hmm. So she's somewhere in that, depending on who you are, you're going to ask you. She could be two, she could be three, she could be four. They're not going to Iowa, man. I hate to say
Unless they grow up in West Des Moines.
I guarantee you there is some seven-year-old girl out there in Iowa today who has been watching Caitlin Clarks, but they're thinking about South Carolina,
LSU, Stanford. I mean, that's what they are. Let's be honest with each other.
I agree.
You know?
See, I think that in that fourth quarter, Caitlin Clark was trying everything. I think she was kitchen sinking it. I think she knew, you know, when she sat up there after the game and read off those rebounding numbers and said, hey, think about what it would have taken to make that up. Yeah. I think that gave you a real window into her fourth quarter mentality. Okay. I think that told you that she is sitting there going, okay, I can't play center, right? I can't play
every
position.
Although she did lead them in rebounds. Go ahead.
But she can't, I mean, you can't. You cannot play every position, right? And we would have called her a ball hog, and we would have said she wasn't playing team basketball.
I wouldn't have in the fourth quarter because she's Caitlin freaking Clark, and she's the greatest scorer in the history of women's basketball, but that's just me.
Right, but I think she knew, right, the rebound disparity. I think she knew how many points had to be made. So, first, she's taking what I would say unadvised threes at certain points. I think she was chucking...
No, but we've been saying that all year.
Chucking the ball up in places.
In the first quarter, she took a couple. I said, that's just ridiculous, and it went in.
It wasn't the distance. It was that they were too strong, right? Where was she hitting? It wasn't that it wasn't that they were falling short. She was sometimes hitting the backboard or the back of the rim in a way where the angle was bad and you knew it was going to pop right back out, right? Yeah. So first she's doing that. Then she's trying to pass the teammates. Great. If the defense is collapsing around me, I'm going to pass the ball. That didn't work, as you point out. I just think that there is a point where she sort of saw the overwhelming force in front of her. And there just wasn't a way through. And maybe you're right. There would have been some nights, you know, 3 out of 10. I can't do the math. But some nights where she could have just exploded for another 18 points in the fourth. But it wasn't likely that was going to happen. We can't judge her against that's the standard. That's the most likely thing. And why didn't you measure up to it? That was the most unlikely thing. And it didn't happen.
I never, for one, as you know, Skip, thought that Iowa was going to beat South Carolina. Even if she had 60 points, for some reason, they was going to score more. That's just, they had a deeper team and a better team.
Okay.
It's just a much better team.
But if you told me that Caitlin Clark would go 2 for 9 over the last three quarters from three, I'd say this is a 25-point game. And they had the ball down 5 with 4 minutes left. I still don't even know how they did that, honestly. It's like ridiculous that they even had a prayer of a chance. And it was a prayer. And to your point, if she had come down and hit a 3 at that point to cut it to 2, I'm pretty sure South Carolina would have said no,
Came back, hit a 3, put it back to 5.
God, they were bombing. They had a better 3-point shooting for percentage for the game. They shot 42% to 39% for Iowa. So how can you beat them when they outshot you from 3?
And the bench, too. I mean, you kept saying it,
Lord,
the bench number.
Mercy.
37 to nothing.
37
When the bench is outscoring your bench 37 to nothing, if you're Caitlin Clark, again, now she's got to be the bench, too? I mean, you cannot ask one person to do that much. No. And I just think that you look, you know, South Carolina likes to say we don't have 5 starters, we have 10 starters. This is a credit to Dawn Staley, the way she has prepared that team. She has consistently taken freshmen through her time at South Carolina and prepared them to play at this elite level sooner than any other coach in the country has been able to do. And we saw that. I mean, you mentioned Phil Wiley. She came in and changed the energy of the game. And they told a great story on the broadcast about how Dawn sat her for a game in the middle of the season to sort of get her head straight about what she would need to do at this level. That is preparation in what? I mean, I don't know exactly what month. Was it December? Whatever that was, to get into April. And that is the kind of coaching job Dawn Staley was doing. If you're Caitlin Clark, at some point, you can't overcome every single one of those barriers.
I guess it's because I'd watched South Carolina consistently through the tournament, and they didn't steamroll. They had some close games, and I thought, well, maybe they just don't click down the stretch. Maybe there's an opening here for
What happens is you get complacent. I'm much better than you. Mm. So at the end of the day, that's what it is.
I agree.
I'm better than you. We're better than you, and we're not going to always beat you by 40. It's going to be because we're cruising along. We're not, and that's why Don would be so aggressive and mad at them because of that. Not finishing the deal, keeping people too close to you, and you're a much better team. Now, you in the championship game and you play against NC State, you just wiped them clean off the floor.
It was that, ridiculous.
It was a wasted watch. Mm-hmm. Other than I like to watch it because of South Carolina and Don Staley, but other than that, it's a wasted watch. And now you look at this national championship game. They elevated everybody, elevated to the next level. As you said, the bench as well as the starters, all 10 of them, they elevated to the next level. If you rewind and you go back to round one or round two, they gonna coast through that. That's it. Even if they would have played Iowa in the first round or the second round, it would have been a tight game and they would have coasted through it. They probably still would have won, but they would have coasted through it because they would feel boring. I'm bored. I'm going to beat you anyway.
I think that's how they felt against Iowa a year ago in the semifinal.
This
is nothing.
Yeah, right.
We got this.
And
all of a sudden you don't got this because she was spectacular. And at least you had the revenge motive this time. So you had your eyes wide open. And she still almost closed your eyes in the first quarter. Right?
I mean, Caitlin Clark played exceptional basketball all the way through this tournament. I don't consider her any kind of failure in any way.
No,
she couldn't beat an undefeated team.
This is the magnitude of her. I was just a little disappointed. I just expected last bit of magic from her.
Time to go get that $5 million from the big three and keep pushing.
Hey, that might be the way to go. And by the way, speaking of Dawn, we'll get deeply into this a little later in the show, but should she take an NBA job? And I'm looking at what she's got coming back next year, and she loses Cardoso, but that's all she loses. And I think they are so loaded.
Yep.
Could they go, here we go again? Could they win it again?
I wanted her to come coach the real USC men. But,
really?
You know.
Hmm.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Okay. Too late.
Too late? Were you pushing behind the scenes for that?
No.
Alumni calls.
All right. Okay, now we got to get to the hottest story of the later night yesterday. Calipari to Arkansas? Why I'm not surprised is next. Story of the night. John Calipari to Arkansas? So, Keyshawn, you said there was no way Kentucky would part ways with Coach Cal, so I assume you were shocked by this breaking news.
Well, they didn't part ways with him. He parted ways with them. They didn't part ways with him.
They let him go.
Yeah.
They did not try to keep him.
Well, no. $33 million or whatever. That number's, am I right? $33 million dollars they want to hook for. If you fire him, you write a check no matter what. Horse racing and bourbon and all that can pay for it. It does not matter. It's still $33 million. Mm. In the end, he met with the athletic director. He met with some people in the administrative offices, the presidents, things of that nature. And they said, okay, let's just see how it goes moving forward. And Calipari said, okay, fine. But those conversations wasn't as easy as they are with me and you right now. Those conversations was tense.
Mm-hmm.
They were heated.
You better believe it.
And he walked out of there and he said, okay, I got something for y'all. And he sat and he watched all the things fall in the landscape. When Eric Musselman left and came to USC, the domino effect from our guy leaving and going to SMU opened up an opportunity.
Uh-huh.
So it was just a domino effect that fell. And you say Arkansas, SEC, not the same as Kentucky, because Kentucky, national championships, and it's the blue blood, and it's the whole deal. Arkansas is not a bad basketball program. Mm-hmm. Having won a national championship under Nolan Richardson back in the 90s.
They did.
We know that, right?
They've got NBA players. They've been to back-to-back championship games.
They've been to back-to-back championship games. They've been to Sweet 16s. They've been to all that. And on top of that, I would argue with anybody that says, from a financial standpoint, that Arkansas is less than Kentucky, because that's not true. Arkansas pockets run deep. You got Walmart money.
Mm-hmm.
You got billionaires that went to the school. Jerry Jones, for instance.
Thank
so
you.
They're going to back the program.
Yeah.
And he knew that. When I got a couple years left on my deal in a lot of tension, as you know, with the Kentucky administration, I could start fresh.
Yeah.
I can go to Arkansas now and I can bring my same recruits that I've been recruiting for the longest, and everybody will be happy there. They won't, you know, be nitpicking that I've been bounced out of the first round and hadn't gotten out of the first round since 2019. And I'm losing to St. Peter's and then Oakland, not in Northern California, but somewhere else. I'm losing to these type of teams.
Yep.
I won't have to keep hearing that throughout the course of the season. I start fresh. I know I'm going to get the support. NIL money is going to be crazy. So it's a perfect situation for it. You know, it's a perfect situation for him. I'm excited to see where it goes, to be honest with you.
I was shocked when I saw the news. I was shocked overnight. But the more you think about it, this is a you're not breaking up with me. I'm breaking up with you. I'm breaking up with you first.
Exactly.
I didn't do it. You know, this is definitely that kind of vibe. And you saw when they had that press conference with the athletic director after they announced he's coming back. It was so tense, right? They just looked like two people who didn't like each
other. Miserable.
And I think it's carryover with the boosters, right? He was getting so much criticism. Look, I still think the boosters of Kentucky would have put out the wallet for getting good players. I don't think they would take that out on not assembling a good team. But I think having to hear it all the time from everyone, you go to Arkansas, that team has not won a title in 30 years, right? They haven't been to a Final Four since the mid-90s. This is a team where it is going to be a grateful fan base if you get to the second round in your first year, or then maybe you get past that. So I think that you have a fan base you're starting fresh with. You have boosters you're starting fresh with. You mentioned the Walmart money, the Jerry Jones money. John Tyson of Tyson Foods.
Big.
Close friend of Cal's.
More billions.
Has been in his ear being like, you don't need them. Why do you want to go where you're not wanted? Come to us. We want you, and I'm going to pay for everything, right? So I think you have that. It's just too appealing. I think for a lot of us, the mindset of Coach Cal at Kentucky, the program and the coach are so married. You just see the headline, and you're like, wait, what? What is happening? But the more you think about it, the more it makes sense. And frankly, Kentucky can get a fresh start as well. And I think there are people in that family that are looking forward to that.
Which is why I conclude win, win, win for Arkansas, win for Kentucky. I told you the morning after Oakland happened to Kentucky, and that was a 14 seed beating a 3 seed. I told you Big Blue Nation will want him gone because it's been too long. They had not been to a Final Four, have not been to a Final Four at Kentucky for 9 years. Keyshawn, that was 4 straight years.
Yeah.
In which they've won one NCAA tournament game. It's also 4 straight years in which they won a grand total of 1 SEC tournament game. Just 1 in 4 years. So they had 3 first-round exits in the SEC tournament. It's just wrong, wrong, wrong. And you guys were all over me. You said there's no way. It's Coach Cal.
He didn't get fired, though, Skip.
Okay, but they wanted him out, and they wanted to ease him out because they wanted not to have to eat $33 million.
Regardless.
So you can't tell me that the Kentucky powers that be weren't also behind the scenes trying to work him to Arkansas, trying to make it facilitate the move to Arkansas to make sure that, hey, you guys want him, because they needed him out and they did not want to have to pay him $33 million to exit. But again, it's been 9 years since Kentucky even went to a Final Four. And over his time, look, I love Cal. I've been around him a lot. You know him. You've been around him. He's just tremendous, but he's done a brilliant job of ingratiating himself with all the right people in the media because he's fun to be around. And I'm the first to admit, I enjoy his company. Yep. Who doesn't? I enjoy his off-the-record company where you
absolutely.
Can... It's all... He's smart that way, but in a good... He's like a lovable scoundrel, if you will, or whatever. Not that he's a scoundrel, but there are a lot of people who don't know him who think he's a scoundrel. So my point is that he's been overprotected by the media over the years, because I can make the case he has done less with more than maybe any coach in history, because they've had 35 first-round picks in his tenure there. 35 first-round picks?
Yes.
And you gave him one championship in 2012, so it's been 12 years since that championship.
Well, the landscape of college basketball has changed
it did.
Over time.
No it's, doubt.
It, it's and, not the same. You can't go in there with a bunch of freshmen and think that you're just going to win a national championship. You got 5- and 6-year COVID babies that's still playing basketball.
Yeah.
These dudes is grown now, you know? And so it's just a different, it's a totally different mindset. That's why he has to shift his thought process at Arkansas, where you have to have a mix of young and old to be able to get to where he's trying to get to.
Well, you want to use the portal more than you want to use the high school
kids. That's considered old.
Yeah.
No, when you're in the portal, most likely you're old.
Well, that's where the Tyson money and the Walmart money, and maybe Jerry keeps making basketball analogies. We're hanging around the rim. Maybe he's more into basketball.
And look, by the way, the money to pay staff, right? Because yes. That's when you talk to former players in Kentucky, and I talk to a lot of them. Boogie Cousins, Anthony Davis. I've had conversations with all these guys in the last couple weeks, and they talk about that his staff at Kentucky is not what it used to be, and that some of the guys who really, as you know, would pull the player aside. Yeah. Coach Cal's saying all this, but here, let you and me talk. You know, those kind of relationships, those are key to making any team work, football or basketball. Mm-hmm. And that staff wasn't there in the same way over this last year or so as it had been in the past on that championship team, for example, when you talk to Anthony Davis. So they're going to be able to pay a staff for him that is going to have just the best of the best in the assistant coaches
as well.
So it translates all the way through. I think Cal did look at the transfer portal a little more a few years ago. He kind of tried to go that route, didn't quite go there, went back to what he knew, that sort of thing. But I just think when you have this fresh start, he is going to be energized in a way he hasn't before. In that press conference where he did sit up there with the AD and say, we're all going to be together another year, they likened it to a marriage. And there was a conversation back and forth with a reporter being like, well, you know, you guys fight? And, don't you fight with your wife, sir? And, I mean, there was a little bit of that back and forth.
Good point.
You don't want to be in a marriage where you feel like the person is only there because they can't afford to go anywhere else.
Okay.
Right?
I mean, that's
not the way you want to be married to someone because you feel that they can't afford to go move out and get their own apartment. Kentucky could not afford to let him go, right? $33 million.
Well, I mean, they could if they wanted to.
But the feeling was that they had to, right?
When people fire coaches, as you know, that 33 turns into 60.
Sure.
And more because I got to hire new people and new staff. And so you got to look at all of those sort of things. Where does it set the basketball? Not the athletic program back, but the basketball program from an economic standpoint. Now that you got to pay him whatever buyout it is, and then you got to go hire an entirely new staff, and you're not going to bring in...
You got to pay the players.
You're not going to pay the players, but you're not just going to bring in no anybody at Kentucky. You're going to go reach for the top of the top to replace a coach that you just fired. Now, that's going to be more money. I mean, what's it going to take? You know, let's assume that they go after a Billy Donovan, for instance, who knows the SEC, who won championships at Florida. What's that going to cost you?
Yep.
That's going to cost you a lot. Now you got that $33 million back. You can pass that over to somebody and put a little more on top.
Get a nice apartment. $33 million.
Absolutely. And then if they stay in the SEC conference, and because the SEC conference, they do it a lot in football. They just move around. Mm-hmm. They go from one school to the next and the next school to the next. Think about Oates at Alabama.
I like him a lot.
What if he leaves Alabama to go to Kentucky? Alabama, nice Final Four appearance, but it ain't no damn Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to pay that, even though he just signed a new deal that has about a $20 million buyout. That ain't nothing. That's peanuts if you really want him. So you got to think about all those things when you're replacing a coach.
All right. And yet, Coach Cal had already recruited one of the top classes to come in for next year.
Yeah, did they sign yet, though?
You have to think when you say how many NBA prospects has he had. That's not the indicator of college success anymore if they're leaving after a year. So it's just not the marker it used to be, key to your point. And the fact that you can have this great class coming in, if they don't stay, if no one ever stays, you can almost have too good a class. You don't have that chemistry. You're teaching guys who have never been away from home before how to live by themselves. I mean, there's so much about teaching a freshman, if you're a coach, on how to be in that environment, how to function on a team, how to play more games than they've played before. All of these different things, the pressure of the NCAA tournament, where a guy who's never been there before and then never will be again because he's out the door in 5 minutes, it's not necessarily...
I understand, but once upon a time, I watched this kid named Carmelo Anthony just put Syracuse on his back and carry him all the way past Kansas to a championship as a pure, true, raw freshman because he was just better than anybody else in college basketball that year. And this way, the way it's been happening here, those 35 first-round picks, except for Anthony Davis, have not been dominant NBA players. They have not turned into dominant NBA players. So,
really?
Well... Name another one who was just...
Anthony Davis is pretty dominant.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Besides him.
I'm trying to think. I got to...
John Wall had some dominant years. Yeah, I mean,
But nobody's just torn up the NBA.
Yeah, but there's a reason. Carmelo Anthony.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Carmelo Anthony.
That's what happened. That's exactly what happened.
Not everybody does it, which is why he's a standout.
Yes, I agree.
I know, but they were all good to pretty good to okay, you know, like that. So this year,
I turn on the Oakland game because I want to see Rob Dillingham and I want to see Reed Sheppard because they're going to go in the top 10 in this coming draft. Top 10. And I'm watching and I'm watching and I'm thinking, I can't see them. Where are they? And Oakland's got a guy who looks like he's 32 years old and he's draining threes all over the floor. And I'm saying, this guy's unbelievable. But I don't think he can play in the NBA. And he doesn't think he can play in the NBA. And Oakland won easily. And I'm thinking, what happened to Rob Dillingham, Reed Sheppard? I don't know. They weren't ready for this stage.
I just don't think we're in a place anymore where you can compare, is someone going to be an NBA success or have they been an NBA success to how did they do in their 1 year in college?
And on top of that, though, as I said to you, when they lost to Oakland, Skip, my mind as a player, I'm trying to go help my mother. I'm not trying to help you win no damn national championship. I'm trying to go help my mom get a house.
I get it.
So my focus is the faster I can get in and get out of here, the better me and my family are going to be. And that's where young guys now and the young players are saying to themselves, I'm one and done, man. As I told you before, I know how to get to the weight room, cafeteria, and sit on the steps by the bookstore. That's all I know. I don't know anything else because I'm only here for 6 months.
Yeah.
I'm here for 6 months. I'm gone. That's the thought process.
Do you know your way to class?
I'm not worried about that. I'm here for 6 months.
Yeah.
I'm trying to go get a bag.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to help you win a national title.
Mm-hmm. No.
That's.
I mean, if it happens, that's fine.
If we backdoor into it and we roll into it, then great. But my goal is not necessarily to have you win a national championship. My goal is to go get my mother a house.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, this goes back to, you know, the state of men's college basketball versus the state of women's college basketball, right? You've got women who are staying in the sport longer, at college basketball level longer, enabling them to form teams, to form chemistry, to form relationships, to get better recruits following them, right? Because, yes, Caitlin Clark's leaving for the WNBA now, but for the past 4 years, if you're out recruiting and you say to someone, not only can you come to Iowa and here's all the great things about the program, you get to play with Caitlin Clark.
Yep.
You can't say that at Kentucky. You get to play with this great recruiting class because they're out the door already. So I just think that dynamic, that relationship, that way of recruiting and putting a team together is going to have to change for Cal at Arkansas. I'm sure he knows that. I just don't think it's the only thing that's going to have to change. I think the change of scenery, I think the change of staff is going to help, and I think the change of expectations is going to help too.
Yeah, I know Fayetteville pretty well, and at first I thought, boy, Cal in Fayetteville, and then I thought, wait a second, he's been to Lexington, Kentucky, so it's not like it was New York.
See, I've been to both of them.
Lexington is beautiful.
I was about to say, I've been to both of them.
Don't trash talk Lexington.
It seems like Lexington is a little more, I can absorb that a little more than I can Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Yeah. But I like Fayetteville, too. I do.
And they're going to get him a nice house.
Yeah. Quick point of order, this just popped into my brain. One other Kentucky player who didn't even start for Cal became pretty dominant in the NBA, and his name is Devin Booker.
There you go.
So, well, but he was not a starter at Kentucky.
I know, but when you were saying it, I'm like, yeah. I got to think of something.
No. I just don't think they're as related as they used to be.
No, but I
got Rondo?
Pretty good, yeah.
Rondo?
I'd put him in my Hall of Fame. Yeah,
mine too. You got me. You threw off the 35 names.
I know.
I mean, not the names, but you threw out that number 35. And I said, only Anthony Davis.
That's I mean, he's the aircraft carrier. He's the one.
Yeah. Devin Booker slightly behind.
Yeah.
You know, Rondo's right there.
But that's what Cal has done. He's churned out elite NBA players. If you looked at the All-Star game, I think 7 of the guys on the roster of the All-Star game were Kentucky players.
Yeah.
7 out of 24. That's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, like, no program
Rondo
is
didn't
doing
play for
that.
Him. Rondo
no,
played
it was before.
For Tubby Smith.
Right. Yeah. No one else is doing like that, but that just doesn't indicate college success anymore.
The Michael Kidd-Gilchrist were very good and helped get him to the top.
But how many of these great coaches from college basketball, though, have went on outside of Jim Boeheim with a freshman like that has won a championship? Most of them don't. They got older players on their roster with these young dudes winning championships.
Cal had Derrick Rose.
Look at Coach
Memphis,
K. Coach K at Duke, when he started accepting the one and dones with no problem at all, he ain't won no championship.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, it's just a different.
I mean, Grant Hill stayed for what? Three?
Man, everybody stayed. Yeah. All back then,
Michael
everybody
Jordan
did.
Stayed. I mean, you know, you had players staying for 2 or 3 years.
Yep.
It's just a totally different ball game.
Heck, Michael Jordan stayed for 3 years.
Man, go on, Skip, and get us to break mail with all that. What about I want to talk about Michael Jordan right now?
Michael Jordan scores 40 a game for Dean Smith. I don't know what that was.
It's a different time.
So here's what Dawn Staley said at the trophy presentation about Caitlin Clark.
And I want to personally thank Caitlin Clark for lifting up our sport. She carried a heavy load for our sport. And it just is not going to stop here on the collegiate tour. But when she is the number one pick in the WNBA draft, she's gonna lift that league up as well. So Caitlin Clark, if you're out there, you are one of the GOATs of our games, and we appreciate you.
That was strong, and I assume Caitlin appreciated that. But Saturday, Dawn Staley said that Caitlin did need to win this championship to be recognized as the GOAT. So, Rachel, do you agree she needed a championship for all-time greatest validation?
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, even if she had won, I wouldn't necessarily have said that she was the greatest of all
time,
right? Breonna Stewart is a four-time champ, three-time player of the year. Candace Parker, two-time champ, right? Mm-hmm. Two-time player of the year. Taurasi, three-time national championship. I will still say Cheryl Miller. I would put her up against anyone. And Reggie Miller will tell you he's not, as a Hall of Famer, the best player in his own family. So I don't know whether you would have called her the GOAT either way. She is not the greatest player of all time in college women's basketball to me. She is the most influential player of all time in women's college basketball to me. And by the way, just because she's not the greatest of all time doesn't mean, as Dawn Staley says, she's one of the greats. She is one of the greats of the game. She is just not the greatest of all time. The influence she has had on women's college basketball and women's sports is going to be felt for a very long time. Those TV numbers, the interest of the country, is something that not just women's college players are going to be able to talk about and present as, hey, we're just as good. We deserve just as much. We also deserve meals at the Final Four. Remember just a couple years ago, women were posting on their Instagram, we got this little sandwich pack while the guys have a full spread. That's not going to happen anymore because of Caitlin Clark. The WNBA, as she said, is going to get a lift because of Caitlin Clark. But this is going to extend. If you're a women's soccer league, you are going to go in to the broadcast meeting and say, you better pay us because people will watch women's sports. Here is the evidence. And I think it's going to have even a ripple effect beyond that. Now, I'm not equating her to Billie Jean King. That was a different time and a different scenario. But I will tell you this. When Billie Jean King beat Bobby Riggs, you had secretaries going into their office the next day demanding equal pay. I think, and I said it in the first segment, there are kids who have been watching Caitlin Clark who now believe they are as good as any of the little boys in their class next to them in a way that maybe they didn't before a year or two ago. And you cannot underestimate the power of that. I can tell you a personal story. I grew up in Washington, D.C. Christine Brennan was the beat reporter for the Washington Post for the football team there. I just assumed that there were women who covered the NFL, because I grew up reading her. Guess what? She was the only one. But I didn't know that because I grew up reading her.
That's
so as far
point.
As I was concerned, I could do that. No problem. And I think there are girls all around the country who are saying, I could do something like that, whether it's in basketball or not. I think she is the most influential person we have seen. And that is fine without her being the greatest college basketball player ever.
You know, she moves the needle. That's what she does. Now, as far as, you know how I feel about GOAT, Skip. I don't get, because it's always subjective on how you look at it.
Okay, but it's what we do.
I understand. Right? I understand it's what we do, but I can do it the way I do it.
All right.
Let everybody else do it the way they do it. She can't be considered the all-time GOAT, okay, if you want to go down that road, because she hadn't won a championship. You just ran off names, just crazy names, and we missed many of them along the way because there's so many that have won championships along with the statistical numbers and all the other things that they was able to accomplish in college. But her scoring, we can't argue. The effect on the game, we can't argue. Moving the needle, we can't argue, right? Because when you look at it, this was perfectly set up for her to be considered the GOAT by many people. All she had to do was win the championship. All she had to do was win a championship. That didn't happen. You're not going to have a conversation with somebody being the GOAT that doesn't have a championship.
Yep.
You're just not.
It's just not
in football, Dan Marino. Nobody talks about Dan Marino. Dan Marino was one of the best quarterbacks to ever lace him up.
He was the greatest thrower of the football I ever saw.
Exactly, but...
But he's not the greatest quarterback of all time. You would tell us that.
Because he doesn't have that championship, so he doesn't even get into that conversation.
Well, he needed a couple, actually.
He needed a couple. I mean, eventually it became a couple because, obviously, Brady set a different standard in Montana and things of that nature.
Dan did get to a Super Bowl and ran into Joe Montana.
But she has nothing to be ashamed about. The conversation on what she is as a player will continue to live on. Just like Rachel said, her influence on the game, away from the game, and on to the next level of pros, we're going to see all of that. Ticket prices are going to go up. Revenue sharing for women's sports is going to go up. All of those sort of things. Now, look, a large majority of it, based on the last couple of years, the eyeballs was on her. But all of these young ladies that played in these tournaments and these games all contributed to those numbers going up, okay? Angel Reese and LSU contributed to those numbers going up. South Carolina and Dawn Staley in her team contributed to those numbers going up. Kalen just happens to be right in the middle of all of that at that point in time in this era where, for whatever reason, in the last couple of years, it just clicked. It just clicked the last couple of years out of nowhere. Where all of a sudden, women's basketball in particular just shot through the roof.
But I wouldn't say it's out of nowhere. I wouldn't. I think she's standing on the shoulders of these incredible women.
I say out of nowhere, it went from here like that, like overnight.
This is a combination of the competition getting better, more girls being allowed to play sports at a more elite level. Right now, all of a sudden, over the last 10, 20 years, you have travel basketball teams that you didn't have. It was this kind of thing.
Rachel, it just shot up.
But that is a lot because the men's game crumbled.
Yeah, the men's
right?
games.
So you had, we talked about this earlier in the
tonight.
Show.
We haven't mentioned it.
I'm not that interested tonight.
Because of that, and because we just talked about, in the women's game, you had players staying longer. Rivalries are allowed to build. You had people who came for Caitlin Clark to this tournament who now know about Paige Beckers. They now know about Juju. They now know about some of these players, and they're still going to tune in next year, and that's going to happen in the WNBA again next year. People who only know Caitlin Clark and who have never watched a WNBA game, they are going to want to watch one of those games. She is, of course, projected to be drafted by the Fever. The Las Vegas Aces, who are a huge draw in and of themselves, have already, before Caitlin Clark had even finished playing her college career, moved their game against Indiana into the full-time 20,000-seat basketball arena. They are going to play in a 20,000-seat basketball arena this Aces Fever game in a game that Caitlin Clark will eventually be in, but hadn't even finished playing college. That's the power of Caitlin Clark.
It is.
That she made them change venues before she even got drafted onto a team of an opponent.
Okay.
Right?
And so, Ice Cube already offered her $5 million to come play in the Big Three.
Right? I think she's going to make more than that next year with her endorsements and everything else. I just think that the effect she is going to have, people come for her, then they look around, they see, well, these women are actually pretty good. The WNBA is deep, man. There aren't that many jobs to be had. There aren't the same number of jobs there are on an NBA franchise because there aren't as many teams, right?
Yep.
So you have players down the line who are better in some cases because they got to fight to keep their jobs in a smaller market.
I'm going back to our original question. Did she need a championship to validate? I'm going to leave the influential off to the side. I'm going to talk about the basketball. I'm going to talk about what I kept seeing all year long from her team, or rather what I didn't see from her team. And I argued with Paul Pierce on Thursday and Friday. Paul thought her team was very good. I thought it was very average to below average. And I think we saw that yesterday because the rest of the team got exposed by a really good and deep, 10-deep South Carolina team. So I'm looking at the draw, and I thought she was in the NCAA put her in the region of death. And I'm thinking, how are you going to get out of here? Because it's loaded with Pac-12 teams, all of which were very good, starting with your team. But the point was, I'm thinking, you have to deal with LSU as a 3 seed? Are you kidding me? I thought there's no way they could beat LSU, and there shouldn't have been a way. But remember, obviously, Angel turned her ankle late in the first half, and I think she was a shell of herself in the second half because she went, 1 for 10? Yeah. She scored 2 points in the second half. And then I I had my doubts about Friday night because I think that Connecticut's team is better than Iowa's team. I thought they were much deeper and better 5-on-5. And it went to the wire and it took a terrible call. I still don't get it. A moving screen call that denied UConn and probably Paige Beckers a last shot at winning the game.
What's that?
Yeah, it's a moving screen. Okay. Well, whatever. I thought it was a terrible call.
3 seconds ago, you call that though?
Yeah, I wouldn't. All right. So the point was, I'm looking yesterday, and I tweeted this before the game, so I'm first guessing. I just didn't think there was any hope unless she went completely three-point crazy, which she is capable of doing. So now I'm back to the question. Yeah, if she had beaten South Carolina sort of single-handedly yesterday, then I'm sitting back saying, you know, I got to rethink this a little bit.
It's a discussion. But you know what, Cheryl?
You're knocking off a 37-0 team at that point.
Yes, so I think it would have been a discussion.
If you got LSU and you got
Connecticut's
dynastic, not that they're a dynasty now, but the magnitude of that program and that coach, and then you turn right around and do it again to South Carolina on the biggest stage, I got to have a conversation here.
Yeah, absolutely.
At least as the 1 year greatest achievement ever in women's college basketball, that nobody's ever done that. Breanna Stewart was but like off the charts tremendous because, as you say, four times, and she was the MOP, the most outstanding player, four straight times. But her supporting cast, trust me, was way, way better than what Caitlin was dealing with yesterday.
Look, if she had won a title, this would... Is she the GOAT? Is certainly a valid conversation.
Yeah.
But I still would say it would not have been an automatic. Cheryl Swoops won a title and scored 47 really points in the title game. So we have seen players
do
electric things like that.
Yeah.
But to your point, Key, without a title, it's not even a conversation. And that's okay, by the way. You don't have to be the greatest player of all time to, A, be the most impactful player of all time, which I think she is, and to then also be a raging success, which she is going to be.
Okay. So what did she do? What were her biggest accomplishments on the floor? She was the greatest distance shooter we've ever seen. So she was the female Steph Curry in revolutionizing the way women play basketball because we'd never seen that before. And we got to see it in the first quarter on full display yesterday because there was one where she pulled up almost on the logo. And when she launches, she does it so effortlessly. I always think it's going to be short. And then it goes in and I'm thinking, how did that go in? It went in. Well, she's done it very consistently. She's a 40%+ three-point shooter. What else does she do? I can make a case that she's the greatest passer of the basketball in women's basketball that I've seen, and I'm going to go way back on you because I know what I'm speaking about, to Nancy Lieberman, and it's way before even your time, way before your time.
I know Nancy Lieberman. Okay. She played in Dallas for the
Diamonds.
Diamonds. Come on, man.
Hey. She could pass it. They called her Lady Magic because she could pass
it. We didn't see her in college.
No, I'm missing the skin.
It was Old Dominion. Yeah. Okay. So the point was, Caitlin can really pass the basketball, but she's not spectacular. She's not, Nancy Lieberman's behind the back, between the legs, but what she will do, she'll push it full court, like three quarters court. She did it four or five times yesterday, and her teammates couldn't cash it because it's hard to catch it on the dead run, and then all of a sudden you've got Camilla looming over you, swatting it. But she is not a good passer. She is an all-time great passer. It's textbook passing. But Paul Pierce was so impressed with her on Friday as a passer of the basketball because she gets it.
She had 12 assists against UConn?
Yeah, she did. And it's high basketball IQ. She had, didn't she have 14 against LSU? Yeah. Okay, so you got the combination of greatest distance shooter and one of, if not the greatest passer of the basketball. That's a hard combination because it puts her in an identity crisis. Well, are you a shoot first point guard or what are you? She is the ultimate scoring point guard who can do both because you don't usually see it in the NBA. If you can shoot it and you're the point guard, you usually average four assists because you're mostly shooting the ball,
but
right?
That's why Steph Curry is such a good comp, right?
Yeah.
Because Steph Curry is such an underrated passer.
He is.
Right? Knowing where to go, the way he is able to get his teammates the ball, the cuts that he makes, the way they are cutting around him. And I think if you look at one of the best broadcast calls I've heard this year, Caitlin Clark from the future. Did you catch that?
That was a great line.
And I think that we are watching that when we watch her three-point game. You wouldn't call Steph Curry the GOAT of college basketball, would you? Would you ever say that he was the greatest player to ever
really
play college
basketball?
Okay,
no.
Yes, but
Steph
would you call
Curry?
him? That's my point.
No.
Great. Thank you. Now, his NBA
hey,
success.
Listen, I used to get crushed on ESPN for saying Steph should be drafted ahead of Blake Griffin in that draft. And I'll do it again. I'll take it right now.
But just because
you're not taking a small versus a big, athletic big that could dunk and do it. Just,
I know.
Back then, they weren't doing that.
But right. You saw a revolutionary shooter and you saw point guard skills, even though he was the two guard at
Davidson. But
you would
never argue, even with those skills, that he was the GOAT of college basketball.
No.
So the same point, you're not arguing that about Caitlin Clark. And by the way, if she has a Steph Curry career in professional basketball, right? So I think this paradox is she can't be the GOAT without winning a title. There's no question
about
that.
It's hard. It's
even if she had won a title, I personally would hold her up against some of those other players I listed and said there's no way an automatic conversation.
You know, as a kid, I saw Sherrod Miller play.
But it's not,
so,
right?
I saw her play at high school. Score 100.
Score 100 in a game.
I saw Lisa Leslie play in high school, score 100.
Okay.
So it's just.
She scored 100 and a half, didn't she, at one point?
Something
Lisa
crazy,
Leslie?
Yeah, yes. It was something
all right.
Bizarre.
So last quick point. Not that there haven't been a lot of great white players, but did it help that Caitlin was white in revolution or bringing eyeballs
I'm
to the...
That.
Yeah.
It's too hot for you, Rachel.
I would say
it certainly helped. Come on, now we can't run from it.
No, we can't run from it.
The reality of where's Iowa? Okay? It's in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the middle.
Smack dab in the middle. Yeah.
You got people over here, you got people over there, you got mm-hmm. people at the top, you got people at the bottom. Everybody watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
It is.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with it at all. That's why the ratings are where they're at. Nothing wrong with it.
Good. Well,
Rachel's
said.
Rachel's like, I'm not going to touch that. I want to stay right here on FS1 with you guys.
I love you both.